You have never seen a humanoid life form look so surprised, said Liza, chortling with the memory, as those Cardies did when 42 Scrang, 6 Malons, and a human breached their defense perimeter, screaming, "The spirit of the river demands a gift!" at the top of our bloody lungs. Skaya convulsed, grabbing at his middle, his jaw swinging wide in a silent Scrang laugh as his tail pounded the floor. "What?" Jury asked him in an undertone when he'd calmed down a bit. "It's a complicated two-language pun," Sky told her, wiping at his eyes. "I'll tell you about it later if you remind me. Right now I wouldn't interrupt Lysistai's story for the world." Jury nodded, smiling her Vulcan smile. "All right." Liza's eyes glittered in the firelight as she smiled an almost feral smile, relishing the memory. "It was pure chaos. They were soft, complacent. They never dreamed they'd be discovered, and even if they were, they'd have plenty of warning from an incoming ship's warp or hypersignature. The planet was supposed to be uninhabited. Where had all these maniacal lizard men come from? You could see the whole thought process cross their ugly faces, and while they were thinking about it, we came over the walls and we ate their hearts," she declared, raising a triumphant fist.
"Ate their hearts," said Utrinus skeptically.
"Well, no, not literally," Liza said, smiling at her. "Most of them lived. We tried not to kill any more than we absolutely had to. The survivors are on their way back to Cardassia Prime in the one small ship we let them keep, preparing Chivuam only knows what story to explain their failure to their superiors. As for the rest, the Malons got 10%, the Spirit's crew took the largest ship and the valuable sensor equipment and headed to Barsave, and I flew one of the Cardi's scouts here."
"What about the planet?" asked Miki.
Liza grinned. "Well, it lies within the Federation's borders, but was unclaimed by any Federation member state. The Cardassian outpost was clearly illegal, so I suppose it belongs to me now."
Utrinna let out a low whistle. "I guess you won't have to worry about having lost your allowance from Daddy anymore," she said with a grin.
"I guess not," Liza replied, smirking. "I've been thinking of opening a resort. The Cardies were using the place as an illicit little club med. The facilities in the base are really quite nice, though being Cardassian, they'll all have to be repainted in some less ghastly colors, of course." She drew her feet up, assuming a sort of lotus position in the chair, and leaned forward with her elbows on her knees, grinning. "Now, tell me, what is my darling sister Clarissa doing here?"
Kate snorted.
"Pissing me off," she replied.
"What else?"
"Ah, what else indeed," said Liza, nodding her head. "Of course, Daddy treats everyone like an employee. I get fired, Claire gets promoted and transferred. And what about poor little Mary? She never had any stomach for the game in the first place."
Corwin looked up, blinking. Sitting in the middle of one of the couches between Utrinna and Aunt Belle, bundled up in a soft quilt, he'd started to doze off after the story wound down, but he came fully back to wakefulness and answered that one.
"She quit."
Liza cocked an eyebrow.
"Quit, you say?"
Corwin nodded. "To hear the twins and Guy tell it, once your dad disowned you and sent Clarissa here, he and your mother stepped up the pressure on Mary to get in line and start pulling her weight. Pick up the slack now that she was the only one left in New Avalon."
Liza scowled, the merriment vanishing from her eyes in an instant.
"Typical," she spat. "Typical Daddy."
"So she put up with it for a couple of weeks, and then your dad gave her an ultimatum. Stop being friends with Guy and the twins, or get out of the house."
"Don't you mean Sylvie and the twins?" asked Utrinna.
"No," Corwin replied with a small grin. "I mean exactly what I said. Anyway, that was the deal. So Mary called his bluff and walked."
"Only it turned out it wasn't a bluff," Liza finished for him. He cut out her key code, locked her bank accounts, everything he did to me.
Corbin nodded.
Son of a bitch, Liza snarled, some vestige of her old, vindictive look coming back into her eyes for part of a second.
What did she do? What happened to her?
Corwin grinned. Relax. You think Pris, Sylvie, and Guy would let anything bad happen? He chuckled indulgently at the thought of his youngest half-sibling's adventure. They shuttled her around between Dad's house, Zoner and Yuri's place, the Larry Lair, Shea Rose, the Jirayan Embassy, Apostrophe House, and Utonium Labs for the better part of a month before the grown-ups put the puzzle together and realized that Mary had been on an extended sleepover tour since Labor Day. Liza laughed, the merriment coming back to her eyes.
Oh, that's precious. Not your cousin Hiroshi's house?
Corwin shook his head. Sylvie had this terrible fear that if they let Aunt Belle see them, she'd ask, "What are you kids up to?" And Guy would blurt the whole plan out from 8 o'clock day one onward. Belle chuckled indulgently. Liza laughed outright again, then became more serious and asked,
"So what happened?"
"Well, when Dad found out, he was pretty ticked off. Not at the kids, at your father. He and all the other adults involved had a kind of war council. They thought about prosecuting. I mean, Mary's 12, that's abandonment. But all the law could really do is force your parents to take her back, and Mary didn't want to go back. So Marty Rose went over to your father's office and made him sign some kind of paper, and now..."
Corwin made a vague gesture toward his aunt, who smiled and picked up the thread. "Mary lives with me now, Liza, and my husband Keiichi and our children on Tomodachi. We decided it would be best if she lived away from New Avalon, for a while at least."
Liza nodded.
"Out of reach of my father's corporate goons," she said. "That's perfect. I'm in your debt, Mrs. Morisato."
Belle's smile widened to beaming.
"I think you can call me Belle, Liza. After all, I'm raising your sister now. Would you like to see her?"
She glanced at her watch and then went on, "I'm sure Keiichi's put her to bed by now, but I don't mind bending the bedtime rule for this." Corwin glanced in surprise at his aunt, but she just smiled and patted his knee. Liza looked surprised, then said,
"Well, if it's somehow possible, yes, I'd like that."
Belle got up, smoothed down her skirt, and held out her hand. "Well, just come with me, then," she said, and Liza, looking puzzled and a bit meek, took the outstretched hand and let herself be led out of the room. Corwin watched them go, then shook his head in amazement.
"What?"
Uchna murmured as the rest of the group around them broke up into individual little conversations about what they'd just heard.
"The ones who don't know Belle much," Corwin told her, "think she's just taken Liza off to make a vid call or something."
Uchna nodded in a, "Yeah, well, she is," sort of way, then gasped softly, her eyes going wide.
"You think she's taking her there? Through the mirror?"
Corwin nodded.
"Bet on it. The look in her eyes. Aunt Belle's got a project,"
he said with a wry grin. Uchna considered it, then shrugged.
"Well, more power to her. I'm just amazed at the whole thing."
Me too. Whoever thought two of the Broadbent girls would turn out okay? Belle and Liza came back a few minutes later. Liza was looking a bit shaken and a bit teary-eyed. She hugged the goddess gratefully, and they whispered back and forth for a few moments before Liza went to her chair and Belle returned to the couch. That drowsiness was overtaking the warm, well-fed crew as the evening grew late and the storytelling wound down was obvious. In the time it had taken Belle to take Liza to visit her youngest sister, several of the duelists, including Uchna and Corwin, had fallen asleep. Belle went around gently rousing them and packing them off to bed, one by one. As house guide, Erd, once she herself was woken, took Liza to one of the unused rooms on the third floor and told her that they'd sort the rest of the stuff out over the course of the weekend. "You need anything? I'm in the South Tower, etc. Good." Yawn. night. Liza stood at one of her room's three tall windows, not particularly tired, looking out over the sweep of the campus. The street lamps glowed, each individual lamp its own little round ball of yellow light in the still falling, though lighter, snow. The clock in the admin building's clock tower was just striking 11. Corwin's long black car was completely buried, just an oblong lump down in the visitor's parking lot. No tracks were visible anywhere in the smooth white snow. She turned and regarded the comfortable-looking double bed, then blinked as there was a knock at her door. She went to open it, and there was Azalyn, looking unusually serious. Liza smiled. "Hello, Azalyn," she said. "Come in, won't you? Listen, I'm sorry if I disturbed you with my, greeting," she went on, grinning. "I just had to." Azalyn nodded. "No," she said, not disturbed exactly, but I was very surprised." She chuckled. "A lot of things about you have very surprised me today." Liza smiled again, climbed up onto her bed, and sat cross-legged at the head. Azalyn sat down at the foot end and looked thoughtful for a moment before saying, "Liza, before you left, I never got a chance to tell you I was sorry for writing you off the way I did. And when you disappeared, I thought I might never get the chance, and that tore at me. I'm a Dantrovian. We're supposed to forgive our enemies, love them, if they give us any chance at all. And I never tried with you. I just wrote you off, callously. She shook her head. "I let myself hate you," she said softly. "And I'm sorry." Liza knee-walked to within arm's length, put out her hand, and placed it on Azalyn's shoulder. The Dantrovian was surprised at the sensation of heat which came from that small contact, and looked up to meet Liza's clear blue eyes with her gold ones. "Azalyn," said Liza quietly, "do you remember the night, months ago on Earth, when I was taking Kaworu's notebook to Olin Hall to burn it, and you and Amanda Dessler stopped me?" Azalyn nodded. "Of course. That's just the kind of thing I'm talking about. When we were alone, after Amanda walked away, when you touched my neck, whispered in my ear, and left me sitting on the icy ground, I couldn't get up for almost 10 minutes. For a long time I thought about the reasons for that. At first I just assumed I was terrified, weak with fear of your claws and your anger, and had to take some time to gather myself. But out in space, with nothing to occupy my mind but the fatigue and the soreness, I thought about it some more, and I realized I was wrong. I wasn't afraid of you. I was afraid of Dessler when she threatened me, because I knew that she could and would do what she said she would do, but..." She paused, taking a breath and letting it out in a sigh. "I wasn't afraid of you. The feeling inside me when you left me there was something else." Azalyn blinked. "Something else?" she murmured, puzzled. Liza grinned and moved her hand to cup one side of Azalyn's face. They began, slowly, slowly, moving toward each other. "I want you to understand something," Liza said softly. "What's that?" Azalyn whispered, her eyes beginning to close. "I'm not interested in your religion," Liza breathed. "I don't want a new spiritual experience. I just want you." "That's a refreshingly honest approach," mused Azalyn, just before their lips met. The next day, Liza requested Duelist Society membership from its officers and received it on the way of her clash with Jury. She took official possession of Room 311, where Erd had put her for Thanksgiving night, and promptly ceased to use it much. The duelists were summarily amazed at the relationship, hell, the romance, that sprang up between Azalin and Liza. It was certainly an odd one. True to her word, Liza wasn't interested in the Dantrovian spirit religion, and paid it very little mind. That extended to staying out of things when Azalin had an observance that involved someone else, like Miki Kaworu and occasionally Dorothy. The mental disconnect involved in separating Azalin's religious encounters from their own relationship seemed to cost the newest duelist no particular effort or stress. She just sailed on as usual, serene and grinning. Before all that got really entrenched, though, on the first Monday when classes resumed, Liza exploded onto the Institute's scene with all the color and impact of an artillery shell and about as much subtlety. Her younger sister, whom she had carefully avoided alerting to her presence until her enrollment was confirmed, was first stunned, then appalled, by her elder sister's new name, her new look, and her new attitude. Her old clique recoiled in terror, as though they feared she might infect them with whatever madness had overtaken her. Vigdis Brightblade, emerging from her funk only with the greatest of reluctance, actually thought she was rather fun. She reminded the Valkyrie of one of her compatriots, Gudrun Trumace, but she learned quickly not to mention that in front of Clarissa, who would go cold and silent at the very name of her lost sister. B-term was a write-off, with only 3 weeks remaining, so Liza audited Caitlin's classes and prepared for the ordeal of testing her way back into the class of 2407 with a take-home exam over the holiday break. Of all the things about the new Liza that startled everybody and horrified her old friends, more than the clothes, she didn't have to wear her uniforms yet, she wasn't a student, more than the tattoos, more than the public lip locks with the rodent from Dantrov, it was the fact that Liza Shustal, in a complete reversal of Liza Broadbank's position, was hanging around with Caitlin Hutchins. She lived in the castle, she went to all the same classes, she played ice hockey with Kate, her tomboy roommate, and some of the other duelists once the lake froze over. There was even talk that she was learning how to run the sound equipment for that silly rock band of Caitlin's. Some of Liza's old cronies wondered if this might all be part of an extremely elaborate plan to finally bring about the downfall of Caitlin, the Band Geeks Federation, and the Duelist Society. But as the term drew to a close and nothing happened, that hope faded. No, it looked like she really had gone mad, completely mad, and decided that the stuttering four-eyed duelist clique leader was her friend. Stunned and disheartened, they turned to Clarissa for leadership, but Clarissa was dumbfounded, completely at a loss. This was an almost intolerable reversal, more devastating than Liza's original disgrace. Then, Liza had simply failed. Catastrophically, unpardonably, but still, she had only failed. This was an outright defection. Along with Mary's, that made 2 out of 3. The middle Broadbank daughter, the only Broadbank daughter left, retreated into a shell of concentrated disbelief and seemed determined to ride out B-term that way. That suited the duelists fine. It kept things quiet. For the weekend before B-term finals, Corwin came as always, and he bore with him happy tidings. In years past, when Caitlin was just a little girl and those who came after much too young to remember, her father had held a massive party every Christmas, inviting everybody he could think of to come to his vacation home, his beloved castle on a seaside mountain on Titan. As the Babylon Project and the International Police Organization had grown in complexity, its demands had increased, and the Hutchins clan leader had been forced to discontinue the practice, in favor of quiet family Christmases at his home in New Avalon. But now, with Challenger and Babylon 5 both fully operational, he felt the time had come to revive the tradition, and Corwin's news was that the duelists and their friends were all, anyone who wasn't heading home for the holidays and cared to make the trip, invited. Titan, though in the solar system, was not part of the Earth Alliance. Rather, it fell within the notional borders of the Republic of Zeta Cygni, owing to the fact that, thanks to a clever real estate deal prosecuted in the smoking aftermath of the War of Corporate Occupation, it belonged wholly to one of that Republic's most powerful men, who had promptly built a vacation castle on it. Therefore, even though many of the duelists were still personae non gratae on Earth, they could make the trip to Titan for Christmas at Castle Eyrie without fear. Liza considered begging off. The duelists had accepted her, but all those adults might find her conversion hard to believe. But Caitlin wouldn't hear of it, and neither would Azalin. Besides, Kate insisted, Dad will love the story of how you and your Scrang stuck it to those Cardassians. And anyway, Aunt Belle, Keiichi, their kids, and Mary will all be there, and you know Mary would love to spend some time with you. Convinced, Liza spent finals week studying for her replacement test, then packed a bag and joined the rest waiting for transport to Challenger, and thence Titan. Elizabeth Caroline Broadbank would have been horrified at the thought of spending this most festive holiday in the very bosom of the family she'd been raised to hate. But Elizabeth Urtas Tristal was very much looking forward to it, now that she'd been convinced that she'd be welcome. Sitting on the front steps of the castle, she put part of her heavy traveling cloak around Azalin next to her, squeezed the Dantrovian in one arm, and said, "You know, I'm very much looking forward to the look on Kate's father's face." Azalin giggled. "That ought to be something," she agreed. Then she shook her head and said, "A lot of changes." Liza grinned. "Indeed. But you know, I think I like it." Eyrie Productions Unlimited presented Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword No. 2, Second Movement, Blue Moon Serenade. The symphony will return with Another Christmas Rose.